welcome to the Business of Story, episode number 367, as we celebrate our 7th year anniversary, all of July. I'm Park Howell, and today we will explore how you can implement the growing trend in agile communications to accelerate the growth of your agile organization with a special guest from a writing platform that most every creator uses, Grammarly. Being an agile organization is all about speed to market, but nothing bogs down growth faster than clumsy, confusing, frustrating communication. Therefore, agile messaging is all about speed to meaning, providing concise, clear communication across the flattened out org chart, which is one of the hallmarks of agile organizations.
The other thing, though, is if you took that org chart now, you thought about it a little bit differently, which is lots of nodes that are all communicating with each other internally as well as externally, and all the different systems that they're communicating in, 13, 14 different systems that they're communicating in written form in, and all the fast interactions back and forth, that world now becomes even more complex. And that is the reality that most organizations are in. You have more systems with a more diverse workforce, more distributed, and to your point on agile, you're trying to flatten the org and empower the lowest level of the org you possibly can to take action rather than it needing to come up to a smaller group of people centrally.
Dorian Stone oversees all B2B organization revenue and operations for Grammarly Business. Previously, Dorian was VP of Customer Experience Strategy and Marketing at Medallia, and spent over a decade at McKinsey & Company as a partner and co-founder of its global customer experience practice. Before McKinsey, Dorian served in the Peace Corps as a program director and volunteer for small business development in Panama. He serves on multiple community and professional leadership boards and councils and is a strategic advisor to multiple startups. Dorian holds a master's in international studies from the University of Pennsylvania and an MBA from UPenn's The Wharton School. On today's episode, we'll take a deeper dive into the startling report on business communication trends Grammarly co-authored with the Harris Poll on how communication is costing American companies $1.2 trillion annually, not to mention how poor communication is impacting recruitment and retention of top talent and its drag on performance and growth. You can also hear more on the study from the Harris Poll's Abby Lunny, who appeared here a couple of weeks ago on episode 362. So go check it out. Dorian will share his definition of effective communications, 3 significant trends happening in agile messaging, how you can connect distributed working models through agile storytelling, and how you can regain the one lost day per employee per week caused by miscommunication with a more agile and effective approach to team communication. Please welcome to the Business of Story, Dorian Stone. Dorian, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, it's great. You know, when I came across Grammarly's trends in business communication for 2022 that you all did with Harris Poll, I found it about a month and a half late. I didn't catch it when it first got released, but I was blown away by the numbers in there. The amount of money miscommunication is costing American businesses, $1.2 trillion annually, is unbelievable. And I was lucky to have your co-author of that report, Abby Lenny from the Harris Poll, on the Business of Story a couple weeks ago, show number 362, for those of you listeners who didn't hear it. But I just want to thank you, Dorian, because she helped me connect with you all over at Grammarly and for you being here today, because, number one, Grammarly is a huge part of my life in that you follow me everywhere online correcting my prose, and I appreciate that. And number two, it seems to me, at least the requests I've been getting for Business of Story masterclasses, mastery courses, there is a tremendous change afoot around the agile organization and companies large and small coming to us and saying, help us. We need to clarify our communication. We need to be faster in what we communicate, getting our people on board. And now with this hybrid environment we have out there, it's even more tenuous of how to do this. So the timing to have you here is absolutely perfect. I just want to thank you first for taking the time to be here on Business of Story.
That's great. I'm looking forward to diving in.
Now, the first thing, though, first thing, is I did not know until I started doing my research for my last show with Abby that Grammarly is a Ukrainian-founded company. So I've got to begin with this. Of course, my heart goes out to your colleagues over there. How are they faring over there with the war on Ukraine?
Well, I will say I have been personally inspired, not just by what we see in the media and what Ukrainians are dealing with every day, but what I see inside our organization. The moment the war started on Ukraine, everyone pulled together, Ukrainians and all others, and really started supporting each other, working round the clock to do whatever was right to help take care of team members, of their families, pitching in whatever way we could as a company. We rapidly deployed a number of resources and actions, both to support the safety of our people and their family, but also to support Ukraine's cause in fighting against this war. It's been a very inspiring experience to be part of, even at distance. Grammarly is a very values-driven organization, and we have a tremendously talented but dedicated workforce to that mission. And in fact, you know, one of the things that was interesting to me was as the war started, one of the first things that a number of our team members in Ukraine pointed out was, this is exactly why we exist. Like, communication is needed more than ever in times like this. It was amazing. I remember leaving the office, getting off a call with people scattered all over Europe, very uncertain times, and the one single thread rising up through that organizational meeting, company meeting, was a rededication to not just Ukraine, but also to the mission that we have as a company, and the fact that our Ukrainian colleagues put those two things together, I thought was really phenomenal. So we are very, very fortunate to have a very resilient organization, very values-based organization, and I think it's just been inspiring, and my heart also goes out to everyone that's been impacted by this. I hope it does come to an end quickly and with the success of Ukraine, but until then, we're all plugging along.
And you still have an office open there, and is it Kyiv where they work out?
We have a location in Kyiv. For safety purposes, right now, we don't have folks using that office location. But again, safety of our team members is first and foremost. Mm-hmm. So we have that space, but we are keeping folks away from any centralized meeting spaces right now.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for covering that with us. Again, my heart goes out to all of you, and hopefully we can get through this quickly. Dorian, can you give us a little bit of your backstory? How did what led up to you joining Grammarly? How long have you been there, and what do you do in your day-to-day role?
I will take you back about 8 years ago when I met the founders of Grammarly. Our current CEO had recently joined. He was in San Francisco. I happened to have an opportunity to meet the co-founders. And one of the things that struck me was how purely they wanted to solve a very simple problem, which was helping people to communicate better, to improve their lives. And that's how our mission came about in terms of improving lives through improving communication. Fast forward 8 years, I was reintroduced to the company. I had seen how far it had come along. But what really struck me was the dedication to that same simple mission. And despite all the success of Grammarly, the humility to continue to dig in, to understand that there's so much more that we need to be doing because this problem is so pervasive and so difficult to solve. I was inspired by the success and humility, the dedication to mission, and the purity of that mission. So long story short, I thought this is a great mission to join, and I'm here.
You know, I take Grammarly on every now and again. I'll be riding away, and I'll go to post something. It'll come up to correct it. And I'm like, who are you? Who do you think you are correcting my stuff? And then I'm like, oh, yeah. It's Grammarly. They probably know better than I do. So you are there as my sidekick, but also my nemesis sometimes, Dorian. So in this, in the research that you all did with the Harris poll, it blew me away, that found that this miscommunication, that employees are actually missing 1 day a week of productivity because of poor communication. And that was the thing that hit me over the head when I was just, those numbers blew me up. What were some of the surprising outcomes that you saw from that report?
Well, I think like you, when the word trillion is next to any cost that U.S. businesses are incurring, you have to sit up and take notice. One of the things that was both made sense to me, but at the same time took me aback a little bit was the enormity of the challenge. You know, communication is difficult. We go through our daily lives, but we're accustomed to miscommunication. It's sort of the water turning up slowly, right? The frog doesn't hop out of the pot. And we've gotten accustomed to this world that's so inefficient. But if this were a line item on your P&L as a business, you would never tolerate it. You would never tolerate this level of friction in your organization. It is the largest line item that you don't see. And I think what the Harris poll showed it was just how large that line item is. And just because you're accustomed to it, and just because it doesn't show up on your P&L, doesn't mean it's not impacting you. And, you know, if you think about where we are right now, the problems businesses are trying to solve, you mentioned agility. It's not just about the lost productivity in any given work week of a person. It's also about the hampering of performance on a company when you add that up over time. And I thought the Harris poll, that's what really stood out to me, is when I put it in the context of a CEO or CFO mindset, and I realized it's not just the cost of doing business that may be squeezing my margins, but it's all the lost time to be winning in my markets. To me, that is what I took away from the Harris poll.
Dorian, let's explore that concept a little bit more of lost time, because like you say, it doesn't show up on the P&L, and it's one of those things that you can never get back, obviously. What do you think businesses can do to kind of overcome that lost time in their communication, in just being more clear with each other in how they communicate?
The way that I think about it is, and in my daily life, as I get up and I think about, we're trying to get from point A to point B as a business. And it takes extra effort when we miscommunicate. That puts friction into just getting work done, whether it be between two individuals, across the entire team, or departments in the company. When I think about what effective communication can do, not just eliminating miscommunication, but effective communication, it drives alignment and it takes tons of friction out of an organization's ability to advance the ball from point A to point B, and how long it takes to get there, in addition to how much resourcing is required to get there. In my mind, one of the most valuable and costly things that a company has to deal with, particularly ones in competitive markets, is the speed with which those organizations can achieve their goals, can achieve the outcomes, whether they use an OKR approach or some other goaling method. Generally speaking, it's not just the goal, it's not just the resourcing, but it's how fast can we achieve that goal and with what surety. And those are other items that are not directly on the P&L, but certainly impact the success of an organization. And so I think what happens is people underestimate how much friction is in miscommunication, but they also equally underestimate how much power is in effective communication when everyone is communicating effectively and things just have to be done once without, you know, having to restate, course correct. Oh, I didn't realize that's what you meant. I thought you meant this. So that was unclear. Can you do that work over again so I understand what we're really trying to get at? And that to me, when you compound that 1,000 times a day across 1,000 managers a day, every day consistently, is a real source of advantage to get to the next point in your journey faster than your competitor.
Yeah, well put, Dorian. Let me ask you this. It's kind of a weird question, I think, but after you said effective communication, it's a question I've never asked somebody on the show. What do you deem, or how do you describe what effective communication is? Because it's, you know, it's a euphemism for we all have to speak and connect clearer, quicker, faster. But how would you define it?
That's a good question. You know, I think very pragmatically. I think effective communication is communication that achieves its goal as efficiently as possible. So I have an idea I am trying to communicate to you. I want that idea to land correctly and be in your mind so that you capture it. And I want that to happen the first time. The mechanism that allows that to happen is the mechanism that drives effective communication. And when it does that, and it does that the first time, we've achieved effective communication. I don't think effective communication is necessarily about one specific style of communication or another. I would say that typically being direct versus indirect and passive voice oriented is probably something that is valuable for folks. Short, clear sentences, not using a lot of jargon, These things are probably are all underpinnings of effective communication. But ultimately, the definition of effective communication in my mind is when you are trying to communicate an idea or compel someone to take action, whatever the objective function you have is, getting that to land right for the person that it is aimed at, the persons that it's aimed at, the first time, that is the definition of effective communication, which basically means effective communication is communication that drives results.
That's great. I'm madly making notes on this end, Dorian. Effective communication is to have your message land correctly the first time. So you're not trying to clarify it and you don't have people walking out of the room going, what in the hell did he just say? I like that a lot.
You know, that's the thing. So many folks think that correctly means that it's written correctly, but correctly, what correctly really means is it actually is heard, interpreted, internalized by the recipient right the first time. And that's the key.
Heard, interpreted. Say that again for me.
Is heard, interpreted, and internalized correctly the first time by the recipient. So it's defined around the recipient's, that landing correctly with the recipient in the way that you intend. That is what then allows it to be effective, because the first time it actually gets to the recipient. Think about communication. It's hard, right? Because we have two sides to every communication. And though, let's just say it's between two people. You have two different styles, lenses, ways of interpreting even the same information. So effective communication isn't just, I put that down in a way that is very clear to me, but it's actually that it's clear and compelling and internalized by the recipient. That is the ultimate measure of effective communication.
So let's move on to this concept then of agile communications, because it seems just to make so much sense, because that's really what we're talking about. How quickly can I get my point to clearly land so my audience understands it and will be moved to action, maybe even be excited to action? And, you know, a couple years ago, McKinsey came out with this report on the agile organization and how so many companies are taking a page out of the playbook for agile software development. And that request is, how do I make my communication quicker, faster, smarter? And it just seems like it falls into play, but people just aren't being taught this out there. Are there some trending that you guys are seeing through Grammarly of maybe where communication, coaching, consulting, even training is going to help these companies do a better job of communicating in this hybrid world?
Well, it's a really good question. I think the agile communication is rising as a topic because, as you mentioned, the McKinsey report, businesses are looking to apply more agile methods to how they actually work and achieve goals. And particularly in a world where you have more uncertainty, agility is actually critical. And in that respect, I think what a lot of organizations are finding is that maintaining the standards that they want to maintain, particularly communications departments, marketing departments, and so on, maintaining the standards they want to maintain oftentimes means they have to restrict who can create, who can approve, and all the processes that go in to make sure that everything is up to snuff with any communication that goes out. Well, that is the antithesis of speed and agility. And so the problem I think a lot of organizations are trying to solve is how can we move in a faster, more agile way without taking more risk of miscommunicating or putting out things that are communicated poorly and either cause confusion and churn or just simply deteriorate the brand experience, either for employees internally in terms of employer experience or externally with customers. And particularly if you think about large organizations that rely on agencies and lots of third parties, much less a distributed workforce, to be putting more and more out through more and more digital channels, now you've got a real tension. You've got the tension between, I've got all these resources, how do I deploy them to the maximum effect? And on the flip side, how do I ensure that everything is at the right quality with the right consistency? And how do I do both of, how can I work those two without having to put 12 feet of safety valve on 1 foot of pipe with all sorts of copy edit processes internally? And that creates quite a juxtaposition. Now, I think what we are seeing is we are seeing more people understanding that most roles they hire for, they don't actually hire because of people's ability to communicate or write. However, when you actually look at what some of the underpinnings are of those roles being effective, you realize that actually those skills are super important. Maybe we should put more energy into both training and bringing on tools and related. We also know, and you saw this in the Harris poll, as you referenced earlier, that, you know, frankly, employees get very frustrated when when the communications that they're either receiving or their own ability to actually communicate out is ineffective. And so, and managers report, you know, 3 out of 4 managers report just spending too much time on this issue. So training is definitely going up, but also systems are going up. And what I'd say where historically a lot of folks have gone is to more copy edit type capacity, more safety valves and checks on things. And I think in today's world, when you think about the word agility, that just does not work. That world does not work. And particularly if you're going to more uncertain times and you want to be more flexible, much less get more out of the resources you have. So in our case, for example, what we do is we use our own product. And one of the things that we use in our product, in the Grammarly business product, is a style guide. But what that essentially allows us to do is to allow everyone to use the same terminologies to make sure we don't fall into jargon, not misuse a product name, what have you. And the benefit of that is not just is that resource deployed to every single person that's writing anything in the organization, including our comms department. But our comms department, frankly, can sleep better at night because they know they are not running around having to check everything to the degree that they would have had to otherwise, had that not been deployed in a very distributed way to empower everybody to be on the same page and be built into our workflows. So that's the way we use ourselves. There are a lot of organizations that are solving this in a lot of ways. I think those that try to solve it, going back to lots of checks, templates, what have you, are actually going to work against the notion of agility. I think you have to empower a greater and greater number of folks, more dispersed folks, more distributed folks. The more you can solve for how to empower them to get work done, the more agile not just the communications will be, but the underlying organization will be as well.
Yeah, without a question. When I think of agile software, agile business is all about speed to market, right? And I think about agile communications, it's really about speed to meaning. Like you had said earlier, can I get this concept to land correctly the first time so that we're all on the same page and we can build camaraderie around it? And having been working with this very issue with Walmart Canada and this idea of agility in their communications, when I mentioned that, they came up with the greatest term. I got to give my hats off to it. They said, it's no longer the survival of the fittest, but survival of the fastest in the business world. It seems like, and it just seems like it's only picking up pace.
You know, it's interesting about what you just said, and it's the fastest. I would append to that, it's the fastest to learn, and then incorporate those learnings into the next cycle, whether the cycle be an hour, a day, a week, a month. And one of the things that I think, you know, again, that we find with our own use of our own product is we get feedback. So we get feedback, for example, going back to that style guide, not only in one period does the comms team understand, okay, we've set these standards. We know that this is built in everybody's workflow. Whenever they're typing anything, they're going to actually get the suggestions that they would otherwise get if we were sitting right next to them. That's great. But the other thing that happens is, you know, the world changes. So we see what people are using and which terms they're deciding don't work for them. That's feedback back into comms. But then additionally, as something changes, comms the next day can actually load it in to the style guide. And the next day, everyone is up to speed. No training, no big manuals, no big announcements. It's just built right in. And so it's a living tool that evolves with the organization. And I think, again, that's an example, I think, of what you just described with Walmart, which is what is the speed to learn and act on that new information that keeps you ahead? And if you can do that 1,000 times a day better than your competitor, then you have a structural advantage over your competitor. And particularly you go at uncertain times.
And as these organizations are becoming leaner, you know, more agile, they're flattening out. So you don't have this hierarchical from the top down communication channel that is as dominant as it used to be. You know, supposedly they're doing more co-creation with their people. They are letting their talent do why they came in, you know, to do what they do best in the first place. And I would imagine that has to even heighten the need for agile communications and maybe a tool like Grammarly, because you don't have this straight line pipeline of communication anymore. It is being dispersed through all these people you've given agency to communicate and come up with solutions to problems.
You know, I think if we were to imagine, if we were to close our eyes and imagine an org chart, and as you said, it getting wider and flatter, and then pushing the decisions down to this even wider, more distributed group of folks, you can already start to imagine the challenges versus when it's just 2 or 3 people at the top, they're all on the same page with each other and have a similar style. thinking about all the diversity of those folks and all the different systems and contexts they're working in. And all of that further complicates the ability to do this well and to show up as one organization and to maintain standards without a lot of friction. And like I said, the 12 feet of safety valve on 1 foot of pipe. The other thing, though, is if you took that org chart, now you thought about it a little bit differently, which is lots of nodes that are all communicating with each other internally as well as externally, and all the different systems that they're communicating in, 13, 14 different systems that they're communicating in written form in, and all the fast interactions back and forth, that world now becomes even more complex. And that is the reality that most organizations are in. You have more systems with a more diverse workforce, more distributed. And to your point on agile, you're trying to flatten the org and empower the lowest level of the org you possibly can to take action rather than it needing to come up to a smaller group of people centrally. That complexity, that diversity makes this doubly challenging. And it's a reason why we build the things we do in Grammarly Business, but because we believe that technology is required, because you can't take everyone off and always train them in a training session. Books that sit on the shelf that have lots of guidelines are not necessarily used. So things have to be built into workflows. They have to be seamless, and they have to be seamless in this increasingly complex digital environment. So we believe that that is a problem to be solved, and that's a problem that we solve, and we are solving it for, you know, the largest enterprises.
And I imagine through your tool, you are able to all really take the temperature of trending communications in business. So you've got this style guide that you do to help people, you know, talk and speak from the same thing, same place. I get that question all the time. So while you guys are the content grammar, you know, platform to help people really pull together and clean up their messaging, I'm more of the form guy. I show them, you know, how to use these story forms, these frameworks that help, you know, connect with the limbic brain. The question that I get so often when someone calls me about a project is the first thing is, Park, we're looking for a common storytelling language, or we're looking for a common way to communicate. And that's, of course, what my frameworks do. But it sounds like your style guide does something similar. I just want to dive into that a little bit more with you, is how does your style guide help large enterprises find that common communication style or language?
Well, first, I would say there's when you think about a large organization, finding that style, and you know, we should all probably just take a step back and think about how important the way we communicate, the words we use, how communicate those are in defining our culture, right, and reinforcing the culture of an organization in addition to the brand out in the market and all else. Now, when you think about that, There's more than just there's a style guide in terms of specific terms and related. There's also, you know, how do we speak? Are we a casual organization or are we a more formal one? Do we want to communicate internally differently than externally? So there's a series of those things that are built into what we do now that allows companies to say, we actually want to be a more formal organization, or we want to be more casual, or we want this department to sound more casual, this one to sound more formal, but then we want to make sure that we're adhering to a certain backbone of terminology that is specific to our company. But there's going to be some variations of style depending on which department it is and what they're doing. And so what we allowed is for the style guide to craft the specific terms and also watchouts that we want every employee to understand as they are writing. So, for example, I heard an interview years ago with the CEO of Wells Fargo. And one of the things that he was saying at the time was how important it is that they don't talk about employees. They say team members. Okay. Well, let's use that CEO's point and the importance that he saw in using team members in terminology and to avoid any terminology around employees as part of the core of the culture and the culture you wanted to reinforce. Well, two things happen in our style guide, for example. One is we can simply say, when you see the word employees, we want to actually suggest to that company's team members, in this case, that they consider using the term team member if they're talking about someone internally or if they're talking about an internal population versus, say, employment, employees, et cetera, in some external facing report about the economy or something. And the second thing that happens is not only will we suggest the change, but we'll explain why. And so if someone kind of covers over that suggestion, not only would they see the suggestion, but they'll see an explanation. And that also reinforces the why behind the what, not just the what. And in large organizations, the why is critical because the what, all the policies, all the things, there's thousands of them. But usually there's some underlying first principles that sit, that drive all those thousands of little things that organizations want to make sure are happening in a certain way. And this is an opportunity in someone's workflow just to reinforce the first principle in addition to whatever the quote unquote policy or specific suggestion is. And when those two things are combined and that happens 1,000 times a day, very seamlessly, you actually start to change a bit of the DNA. And I'll pause there, but I have a question actually for you on this line to maybe make the point a little finer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my question for you is this. You use Grammarly.
Yep.
Have you found that when you first started using Grammarly versus now, you actually have different types of suggestions because you've actually caught some stuff on your own now that before you wouldn't have? And so the suggestion actually isn't even made because you've actually changed the way you've written as a result of previously having suggestions regularly be made.
That's a really good question. I don't know, Dorian, if I really noticed it or not. Well, I guess my answer to that would be it has been so seamless and Grammarly has gotten to know me so well that it, you know, graduated to that in my different suggestions coming in. But I haven't, it's not like my school teacher hitting me over the knuckles with, you know, the ruler because I disconnected something or other in my grammar. So I don't know. I would imagine it's been so seamless I didn't pick up on it.
So we work with some clients in really deep ways to actually put our data and their data together and look at actually what's happening with their employees' behaviors and capabilities. And what's interesting is we find that, you know, we'll get 20-30% productivity improvements in terms of how much time is saved when employees use Grammarly versus when they didn't. But the other thing that we find, very interestingly, is most of that value hits very quickly. And the where it hits and the way it hits is actually evolves rapidly. And it evolves rapidly. And we can see that because the types of suggestions we make on day one versus the number of suggestions and type of suggestions we make on day 30 is markedly different. And so we see employees, particularly employees in fast writing cycles. Think of a customer support team, right? That's actually sending out emails and the companies don't want to sound robotic. They want them to at least have some personalization, but they have to work in a high velocity environment. So high velocity, high quality, you're looking at efficiency. You don't want rework, all that kind of dynamic. What we see is this very pronounced curve where the number of suggestions goes down. The type of suggestions changes, and the reason for both of those things is that the employee is actually changing their behavior as we are interacting with them to actually get better and better at a lot of the basics. And what we find is a lot of the higher level suggestions then start to come up in terms of restructuring a sentence more completely rather than smaller changes within a sentence. And so what we start to do is we start to make fewer suggestions of higher value. And it's as a result of the employee's behavior changing very smoothly, but very quickly over the course of a month. And by the end of the month, like I said, you're probably 80% of the way there to that 20-30% productivity improvement. But you also see that your employee is actually a more capable communicator by virtue of the fact that there's a lot of basic stuff that they're not making mistakes on anymore.
Oh, you got machine learning working on their behalf. And I guess Grammarly then doesn't really become as much of a crutch to clean up your work. That's a ubiquitous your work, but a teacher. I mean, because I do learn when I see some of the corrections I'll look at and I go, now, why is Grammarly suggesting I do that? And then it'll kind of take me back to my school days. And I go, oh, okay, I get that now. And I don't make that same quote unquote mistake again. But I will tell you that I will sacrifice the official rules of punctuation to try to make a point in my copy. And, you know, Grammarly will want to come in and fix it. And I go, nope, yeah. I actually want that comma there because I want my reader to stop and think just a minute, or that ellipsis in there or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. And you mentioned the machine learning and the AI that powers Grammarly. We build that to make suggestions. We don't do the work for the person. We don't do your work for you. We make suggestions so that we can serve as a coach or a partner in what you're doing But the ultimately, we want our users to, and in business, we want the admins and those that are setting certain standards to make the decisions ultimately of what's right in the moment. And what we are working on is getting better and better all the time at how to make the right suggestion to improve what you're trying to do in the context of what you're trying to achieve in the moment you're in. But we very squarely think of ourselves as a communication assistant. And by virtue of that, we work the way we do, which is we make suggestions and we give explanations real time and seamlessly in the workflow. And what we don't do is take actually the human thinking portion out of communication, because we think that's so critical to the magic of effective communication.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you got to have that creativity. And of course, it now begs the question that just hit me upside the head. With AI coming out and you're seeing these programs that are going to write your own blog posts for you now, or I can have it write my show notes for me so I can robotize all this stuff. How does that impact Grammarly? I mean, are these robots and these AIs that are writing this stuff, is their English, their punctuation, their grammar that good that it actually may pose a threat to your service?
As of right now, there's not too much there that concerns me personally. You know, I think there's a lot of very exciting things happening in AI. I think there's also a lot happening in AI that require quite a bit of responsibility for those that are building it. Don't need to go into that today, but I think that's just an important backdrop. And then the second thing I think is I squarely believe that the human for the foreseeable future is the difference maker in what is going to be something special versus not special. Now, whether AI, for example, use the example of your notes, whether AI writes up your notes or not, that could be a great step toward helping you get those notes to where you want them to be. But ultimately, you know, what you are creating versus say what's being transcribed for you, but what you are creating from brain to fingertips to dissemination of the world to affect the world starts in the human brain. And that's where we focus our time and attention, is helping that process be better. And for the foreseeable future, I think that origination point of the brain as the creativity point or the productivity point is going to continue to be the most important and will continue to be really the differentiator between those that succeed and those that don't. And again, it goes back to our mission of improving lives by improving communication. Our mission is not improving lives by eliminating the need to communicate.
Yeah, I like that idea of improving lives by improving communication. I guess I'm kind of in that same camp. I am like, you know, improving lives by actually connecting people through better communication. Yep. And in this day and age, well, we talked about the war in Ukraine, the political environment in America couldn't be more divided. It just seems like the world is more divided. And then you bring in the pandemic, which is making people stay at home, working remote, and so forth. What are some of the trends maybe that you've seen in your purpose-driven helping people communicate that have really come about? Let's start with the pandemic, because that's the dividing line of here's how we used to work. Now here's how we're going to work for the foreseeable future. What are the major trends have you seen in communication?
Well, I think there's a couple different angles. First one, I think, is just the realities of what's happened with distributed working models. First, you know, put upon a lot of organizations, not by choice, but by the pandemic. And in our discussions with managers, supervisors that are maybe above the manager level or all the way up to the C-suite, what we hear time and time again is are two real challenges. One is being able to connect and the stress that comes from not being able to really connect team members to each other or managers to team members. And that just that lack of connection and understanding exactly what's happening. And then you think about miscommunication on top of that, bringing more opacity rather than bringing transparency to an operation where now everyone's not sitting in the same room. That's a major driver of stress for employees and leadership alike. And so that remote work model now that is starting to stick in many industries rather than flip back to in person, either full remote or hybrid remote, that model is going to need to perform. It's going to need to perform not just in a stable environment, but it's going to need to perform in, you know, an economy with more uncertainty. And it's going to have to rise to that occasion. And I think that's a role where communication is exceptionally important for employee engagement as well as for team performance and so on. The second is over the last few years, as you'd mentioned, we're a divided country. And I'm not going to argue that point. But what I would say is one of the things that's very important to us And one of the things I think that makes communication effective is empathy. And that empathy is part of being able to land that message correctly with you the way I intend, because I'm able to have an empathetic understanding of who you are. And as a result, my communication is designed to that purpose. So one area, in addition to generally speaking, that we've made a lot of investment is on, diversity and inclusive language and giving suggestions and explaining why that might be an appropriate suggestion or why this term is actually, maybe it historically was a term that was okay to use, but now is really not the right term to be using given the sensitivities of certain groups. And so we actually have invested quite a bit in improving that side of our communication as well. And that comes out of our own values, what we think drives effective communication. And we want to inform people, again, making suggestions, but it also comes from a rising need in many organizations to start to build this into the way they communicate. And again, you think about all these folks that are distributed, very different backgrounds. Somebody may be well-intended and may just be, and something may come off to the recipient as being offensive or frankly, just kind of otherizing them and not even intending it. And so we've actually done quite a bit there as well. So the diversity and inclusion agenda, I think, if you will, or topic, if you will, is another area that I think is fundamentally changing in business. And as people are in the same room to see each other eye to eye, that much more important to make sure the written communication reflects a level of empathy and understanding. So those would be two examples that I would give you. I think looking forward, the third thing that we're seeing is, English second language. And I think looking forward, as organizations typically do in times of macroeconomic uncertainty and they start to scrub spend decisions and try to hold to a higher ROI, oftentimes they are looking to lower cost areas of labor offshore, or they're looking at how do we get more out of fewer people, but without burning them out. And in both cases, what we're seeing is an increased need for technology to be able to solve some of the challenges that come with those agendas. And so there's quite a bit on our side that we're doing to continue to figure out how to turn up the productivity equation from the 20 to 30% I mentioned to more. But then the second is we're seeing more CFO-driven conversations about time to value. And so the other thing that we're working on quite a bit is how to actually bring the time to value to life and then show where that getting that value, I mentioned that 80% in the first month of the upside, how to make sure that where that's not happening, we can understand why it's not. Is it because someone's not using Grammarly or what have you? And so the third bucket I think here is, in light of the changing world macroeconomically that people are trying to interpret and navigate the uncertainty around, we're seeing more importance in those areas as well. So those are three buckets that I would highlight.
You can go back to that idea of time to value. There you are, that agility, yep. Speed to market, speed to meeting, learning, and putting it into practice, and that time to value or speed to value. How quickly can we get there? Did you see, and I'm not even sure how to phrase this question, I was thinking of it as you were saying it, did you see through the Grammarly AI at the beginning of the pandemic when people were distributed that you saw volume of written communication like go through the roof? And if so, has it come down any now that people are kind of back in the same room together now and again?
So it's a really good question. We are not seeing things reverse. And I think the reason for that is twofold. The first is the uptake of digital channels has just seen an explosion. I mean, just think about the shopping in general, right? So digital mediums in general have taken off as a result of the pandemic. And in a lot of ways, they're kind of here to stay. And as a result of that, there are more places that folks are writing and communicating in written form in those digital mediums, both companies and their customers and companies internally. And so as a result of that proliferation of more and more systems, we're actually not, and we of course work ubiquitously across that. We're not tied to any one system. Wherever you write, we are. So what we actually see on our side, you asked about like the words that we process and all that. What we see on our side is actually continued growth. And I don't think that's going to change. I think there are going to be more folks communicating across more applications to get work done in the business world, to communicate with their customers. I would bet if I put $1,000 on the line that this time next year, even if everyone goes back to the office and there's no remote hybrid work, which there will be, we would still see more. And I think given the trends afoot with a lot of companies staying hybrid and the way consumers are behaving differently and how they're dealing with companies, companies with each other, I think it's going to continue to grow. So if you want to take that, if anybody wants to take that $1,000 bet, I'll put that on the table.
As you are seeing this volume increase, are you able through your machine learning and AI to see if Grammarly is actually increasing the ability of a population to be a better writer?
Yes, absolutely. If I understood your question correctly.
Yeah, I need Grammarly to help clean up that question. The bottom line is, are you making us all better writers simply by being plugged into your program?
Yes. Going to one of the examples I gave you before, in a support organization, we see our suggestions go down in number and change in nature after the first month of someone using us in that department's example. Another example that I would give you is Zoom, Expedia, HackerOne, all these companies use us. There's a long list. We have over 30,000 teams using us in different companies around the world. But in Zoom's case, for example, 73% of communications that went out had at least something, if not multiple things, changed about it as a result of as someone was writing Grammarly making suggestions. Now, another $1,000 bet says that when we update what we have learned at Zoom in 6 months, we will actually find three things to be true. And because we see this over and over in every example that we look at. One, people will be faster. That is to say, for every 100 words you write, you're going to do it faster, right? You'll save 10, 20, 30% of your time. Two, that for everyone there, the changes that we are suggesting in basic things like punctuation, just basic correctness, we'll call it basic correctness, will actually diminish over time in absolute terms because people have gotten better at understanding the suggestion we would make, and then they're just writing it correctly for the first time in terms of correctness. And three, where we will be pushing people's learning curves on and improving the way they write will be on things that are more about clarity, delivery, tone, because we also check on tone and give feedback about tone. And it'll be more in that land, which are higher value elements and of effective communication. So people will be faster. They'll have learned how to solve a lot of the mistakes themselves. And where we will be working with them is on that next frontier of higher quality, more effective communications from a meteor standpoint, if you will. So that's a second $1,000 bet I put down because we see it very consistently across everybody.
Well, Grammarly does best for me when you punch me in the nose the most is with my run-on sentences. And I'm, just getting my thoughts down and the green comes in and the red comes in and like, yeah, I know. Let me clean that up here. But it's very helpful, I will say. So finally, what to do next if a company really wants to start triggering their agile communications, become more agile, speed to learning and imparting that learning. What do you recommend people do right now?
Well, I would say I'm going to take the word agile, do it communications and just agile business because you can't get business done without communication. And therefore, effective communication actually drives the business forward. Ineffective stops it. So agile communications in general, I think the general trend is to move from fixed, bulky, rule-based policies that have lots of safeguards on them, compliance checks, copy editor checks, to more distributed, real-time evolving communication styles that have a common backbone but are constantly alive and woven into all the workflows. That's a problem that technology can solve. And I think for communications departments, broader marketing departments, thinking both internally and getting the most out of all team members in the most consistent and efficient way, as well as agencies and third parties, and be able to sleep at night better as a leader, knowing that you're putting more into more people's hands and you don't want to be taking more risk. I think that is a technology problem. And I think technology can solve that. And that is the key to unlocking agility. And it takes down the pressure and the headaches, frankly, for a lot of copy editors and others that really just get so much stuff piled on their shoulders because everyone wants to make sure it gets cleared before it goes out. That just makes their lives so much better. That's one I would say there. And then going to my second point about agility overall and the idea of businesses performing, particularly with the uncertainty that's facing many organizations today. That's a place where I can't imagine showing up as the best leader, much less setting my organization up for impact personally and for their success personally, if we are talking past each other and or if my managers are having to do things twice and or if with clients, our frontline folks are not being clear with clients and they have to do things twice with clients, it diminishes the client's experience, but also costs us money and time in terms of rework. I can't imagine, given the enormity of the challenge that miscommunication has, and by virtue of that, the upside of effective communication can create for a company, the $1.2 trillion that people are currently incurring, much less all the frustration that's being reported by managers and team members alike. I can't imagine how becoming an agile organization is achieved, much less can be successful in a source of winning, if the communication component of that is not built in. And in fact, if you go back to that full stop, if you go back and you look at lean operations, which is the where it was a predecessor to agile, one of the most important things with lean operations, whether it be on the manufacturing floor or whether it be in a bank processing area, what have you, is effective communication. It's early alignment and effective communication. It's one of the core backbones of what makes lean operating systems work so effectively. And I think that is going to be true well into the future. And it's going to be increasingly true to get that right, not just in in-person mediums, but in so many of the digital systems with such a distributed workforce that we're going to be relying on for the foreseeable future.
Well said. Dorian, thanks for being here. Where can people learn more about you and Grammarly? Or if someone wanted to reach out to learn more about your enterprise systems and what you do, where should we send them?
Dorian.stone@Grammarly. Shoot me a note, and I'm happy to connect you with the right person.
Ah, great. Well, thank you, Dorian. I really, really appreciate your time. I know you guys are swamped there, but I just thought this was such an important conversation to have, especially on the heels of that remarkable report you all did with the Harris Poll, and just talking about agile communications in general. I appreciate your wit and your wisdom here.
I don't know about wit, Mark, but I'll take that one. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And best of luck to all of your teammates overseas. Our hearts and prayers go out to all of them.
Thank you very much.
And thank you all for listening to this edition. If you like what you heard, please share it with your friends, family, colleagues, leaders. If you're not already using Grammarly, why the heck not? And this is not a paid endorsement, by the way. I have been using it ever since I kicked in with the Business of Story, and it has helped me immensely in being less verbose, more clear, and being more agile in my own business storytelling communication. So check them out. Come on back next week when we will have another story artist right here for you like Dorian. And until then, if you have not yet tried the And But Therefore framework for your communication, come on over to businessofstory.com/ABT and learn this messaging marvel. Like I said, I wish I had known about it in the third grade. I wish Grammarly was there in the third grade for me. I would have probably gotten better grades in English. But check it out, businessofstory.com/ABT. And if I can be of service to you, reach out. I'll help you craft and tell compelling stories that sell. Until Monday, remember, though, that the most potent story you'll ever tell is the story you tell yourself. So make sure that's a great one. Thanks so much for listening.